Hello there. Welcome to Minnesota Opera's new podcast, Crescendo, Building the Future of the Arts. I'm Rick.
And I'm Jared, and we will be your hosts. In this podcast, we bring young, queer perspectives front and center.
As professional artists, educators, and administrators, we prioritize sustainable, holistic, and trauma-informed approaches to working in the performing arts.
Crescendo is a space to unpack histories and create exciting visions for the future of performance art industries. So settle in, because we're about to shake things up.
In this episode, we talk about how to define success as an artist. We'll explore images of success and compare that to the reality of being successful. We'll also chat about setting goals and balancing dreams with the reality of the current moment.
We'll also speak with baritone Jeremiah Sanders, one of Minnesota Opera's current resident artists, about their approach to goal setting and bringing aspirations into reality.
So let's get into it. Here we are, episode 2. How are you feeling, Jared?
Estoy cansado, jefe. I'm tired, but I'm here and I'm doing well. I just got back from a little R&R. I got to visit my family in Washington. My partner and I took the Amtrak train. Highly recommend. Drove through Glacier Park. This is not an ad for Amtrak, I promise, but if they sponsor us, we'll take it. But I'm good. I'm back, and you know, this is a busy month for me, but I'm excited. How are you doing, Rick?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. We're doing our recital together called Queer Life, a trans-narrative recital. And yeah, it's starting to set in. The nerves are coming. Preparation is in full swing. So just trying to manage rest with all of the several jobs that I have. But yeah, excited about our topic today, because we're talking about defining success as an artist. So when you were coming up as a young artist, did you also have this vision of success that always included like a fully booked performance career immediately after graduating? Because I definitely had that impression that that was the trajectory for a successful musician. What was your thought on that?
Yeah, I think kind of, yes. Like when I decided I wanted to be a classical pianist in high school, I definitely had that period where I was like on Juilliard's like audition page every single day, being like, can I learn this in time? Can I learn these things in time? Because I had that image of like, I have to go to a conservatory. I'm going to be a like concert pianist at a concert hall, do the concerti and all of that. And that is not where I've gone. I've done some concerti, but like, that's not where my career path has taken me. And I think that things started to shift for me, like I mentioned in the first episode, when I started focusing on collaborative skills and collaborative piano in college, because I started dipping my toe into a bunch of other areas that I had not considered to be like viable career paths per se. Because I'd always played for choirs, I'd played for some musical theater shows in high school, but I thought that that was just something that you did if you were a pianist. I didn't think like, oh, I can make my career off of doing this. And when I was in undergrad and grad school, I had the opportunity to play for many of the choirs, some like large choirs, chamber choirs. I played for musicals. I played for lyric opera productions. I got to do a bunch of recital work, some chamber music. And yeah, and then, you know, in grad school, I got to do coaching and more of the lyric opera side of things. And I've gotten to do a lot in a lot of different areas, and I've liked that, because I know I have many pianist friends who know that they wanted to be like a teacher, or knew that they wanted to do that first path that I mentioned of like being a concert pianist, and others want to just focus on opera, and others want to just play for choirs. And like for me, I don't know if I would want to just do one thing. The variety is nice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think for me in college, I had this like finite idea that I had to follow that kind of track, that classic track that we talked about in the first episode of like, all right, now I got to go get my master's, then I got to do some young artist programs, and then I'll have this performance career where I'm always booked and busy. And then the pandemic happened, and it's still happening in a lot of ways for a lot of communities. I only got COVID for the first time like this February. It was terrible, so it's still happening, but my version of success really shifted to just like making a living, period. You know, like I needed to just have a home and have food and feel as content as I possibly could. Well, you know, it felt like the world was totally stopped. So I think my idea of success in music really got put on ice. And I've just started kind of picking that back up as I started working at Minnesota Opera, which high school me would be like, oh my gosh, you're working at Minnesota Opera. That's amazing. So that was definitely kind of a milestone for me that felt like a piece of success that I had been waiting for. And now with this recital coming up, it's my first time doing a recital since, gosh, 2019. So it feels like another successful step back into performing. But I don't think my vision of success is that one track to like an international performing career anymore. It's really more like doing work that feels meaningful to me, where I can also express an authentic identity. Like so much of the work I did in college and just after college, I felt I was kind of doing drag. Like I was trying to be this like woman soprano, and it just didn't feel good for me. So now I think success is more like maybe doing less, but it feels good. Definitely looking forward to graduating with my master's in arts and cultural leadership so I can be auditioning again. And then I think I'll get a clearer vision now of what success in performing is going to look like for me. But I definitely experienced those big shifts in my idea of what success is. It's a lot more grounded in just being a person, surviving in the world. But what about you? Did your idea of success shift maybe right after graduating or during the pandemic? Like, how has it changed for you recently?
I think it definitely shifted after I graduated from grad school. Like, I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I only worked for, like, 9 months post-graduation. No, yeah, something like that before the pandemic hit. But I think it shifted in that I stopped thinking of it from the competition aspect, I think. Like, I had a really nice, supportive, collaborative studio in grad school where, for the most part, none of us were, like, at each other's throats trying to be like, I need to play for all the opera stuff. I need to play for all this stuff. Like, we were all overloaded. And if something came up that we knew someone else in the studio had played, we would be like, do you want this? Like, it was very, we shared a lot and we shared a lot of those responsibilities. And I think that really set the tone for me going into the professional world, because I didn't have a lot of the competitive side that I think is associated specifically with like solo piano and singing, which I would like to ask you about in a second, but yeah, so that's been a big shift for me. And like, I guess I know I said success doesn't mean my name being known, but it does kind of, because like I don't really care about working at all these big places, but for me, like, I feel successful because I've worked in so many places that people know me. And I don't want that to come across as egotistical, but like I've spread myself around the cities in a musical sense, and like I've tried to work with as many groups as possible because I love learning from other people.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think that comes across as like egotistical in any way. I know you're like, no, please. I think that makes a lot of sense as a working professional. Like, you want to have positive working relationships in a lot of places, and I think that I love what you brought up about competitiveness, because I remember as a young singer who was doing competitions, and like when I was young, like 18 through 20, I won quite a few of them, and then I stopped winning them as much, and my peers were starting to win, and I was like, the competitive spirit in me was just like on fire. Like, I didn't know what to do, and I felt I was so like not angry, but I just felt frustrated because I was like, this is a step back. And it definitely wasn't. But now I think rather than feeling competitive, I just want to have like positive working relationships with as many people as possible. Also without spreading myself so thin. So like saying no to things has also been, I think, a step in feeling successful, is the ability to like balance a calendar and say like, no, this isn't a great option for me, but I can uplift this rad person that I know and put them up for the opportunity. And that feels like success for me too, is just like being able to give people that I care about like a little name drop in an opportunity setting, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And like, I think you said this earlier, it's about the human connection and like the community aspect. That feels like success to me. Like if I'm uplifting the people that I'm working with and leaving a project having had a positive experience and knowing, or at least feeling like this group would want to work with me again, that feels like success to me. I always try to check my ego in situations, like especially if I'm in like a repetiteur position where I maybe have a, I don't know, like higher level of responsibility in a production or something. Like I don't want, there never feels like a place for ego for me. And like, I don't want it to be like, what I'm saying is the be all end all. If you don't like it, then get out of here, you know, like get out of Dodge. That is not how I approach. It's not how I try to approach things. I very much want to be like, this is how I'm interpreting this. Does that align with what you say? If not, I'd love to hear your side. And then let's find a middle ground. And I definitely went through that period too of saying yes to everything. And I think that I needed to do that at the beginning because that's how I got work. And like, you know, there's a lot of great jobs that I did and a lot of not so great jobs that I did. And now it's nice to be at a place where I can say no as well. And to just talk about the pandemic very briefly, like I feel very fortunate that I was able to continue to do music through the pandemic, because I know that's not the case for a lot of people. And even in my case, like I found my high school job like in August of 2020, and it's been really great to have. It's not what I thought I would be doing, and I've gotten a lot of good things from it, I think. But it has definitely forced me to do a lot of mental energy shifting, because it's not always difficult work, but it's like mentally taxing, because it's every day. I am a very antisocial person. Rick knows this. And I, like having to interact with 150 plus people every single day and always be on, and like, I do, like, it feels like code switching to me, because my normal demeanor is like, it's a little goblin-esque sometimes, but like, I'm monotone, I'm dry, I say things under my breath, and like, I learned very quickly in this job that like, I have to change the pitch of my voice, and I have to talk a little bit more excited, and I have to show some expression on my face, or else.
Not the customer service voice. No.
I do. Yes. My partner, John, has experienced this, and many of my like non-music world friends have seen this, where they're like, who are you, when they see me in a professional setting, because they're like, you're so bubbly and like extroverted, and that's just not how you seem most of the time. And yeah, and it's exhausting, but like I had to learn how to do that. And yeah, and I had a question for you, Rick, back to the like competitiveness. And like, I know that collaborative piano is kind of its own separate thing, so like there can be competitive stuff with it, with like, you know, young artist programs and residencies and all of that, but for the most part, like I feel like there is more of that community aspect in collaboration in the collaborative field. And like, as a singer who had stepped away from auditioning and all of that, and is now hoping to and planning to go back to it, like, how do you feel that you're maybe better prepared to deal with some of those like mental reactions that you mentioned that you experienced when you were a teenager and doing it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, one, my brain has fully developed. I'm also humble brag, I'm over the age of 25, so my brain's done cooking. I also think now being like out as a trans person and actually living that, the pressure feels different. I don't know, it was like the compound pressure of wanting the gig, wanting the role, and also the pressure of, okay, now this is how I have to be in this space. I have to be feminine. I have to act a certain way. Or I felt like it was in jeopardy. And that was just because of, I think, some of the pressures that teachers put on me. I had a lot of really great teachers, and I'm not speaking about most of them, but in some situations with professors, there's definitely this sense of like extreme gendered expectation. And when you do not align with that, even as a person, not even just in the character, like in character, no big deal. Happy to, you know, play a feminine role, right? Like that's totally fine for me. But when that expectation bleeds over into what the expectations are of me as a person, I think that's where I just like would get so frustrated because I was doing so much more labor than I even realized and just kind of operating how I thought I was supposed to operate. So now I know myself and I have expectations of workplaces too. So I'm not afraid of not getting something if it's not a good fit. I'm not afraid to say no to something. Like if, even if I were to be offered a role, but I realize through that process that it's just not going to be a good fit for me. It's not going to feel good for me. I'll say no. Like I'm going to be okay. Where I think before when I was younger, it felt like, well, if I don't get this, like what am I going to do? And now I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep doing what I always do and do my jobs and maybe take on more students if I need to or keep auditioning. Like it just doesn't feel like as much pressure because I've lived life a little more, I guess.
Yeah. And there's always more work to do, like as a society, and also like physically there is work, you know, like I think that setting boundaries also is a huge, like that is part of success. I think like that was something that I'm still learning too. I'm sure you are as well. Like you don't have to say yes to everything. Just because you've worked with somebody in the past doesn't mean you have to. Again, if it doesn't align with what you need, like mentally, physically, temporally, like it's okay to say no. And I know that I feel this now, and especially because of like the project that we're doing, the trans narrative recital, I feel now at my, you know, withered age of 28.
Stop.
at my withered age of 28, like I'd feel like I feel more comfortable like creating work opportunities for myself. I think when I was leaving college and all of that, I was like, I need to say yes to everything because I need to keep my name relevant. I need people to like hear my name and say yes to everything because that's the only way that I'm going to get work. And I don't want to be a starving artist. And like, that was maybe true back then, but the more that I'm working as a pianist and the more that I'm away from being in a school structure, I'm learning that like, hey, grants exist, you know, like I have hundreds of music friends. I can be like, hey, I really want to put on this recital of Catalan music or something. And I'll be like, I can coach you, like, and I'll find funding. Like that's something that you can do. And, you know, it's easier said than done to create opportunities and everything for yourself, but it is possible. And I think that it's really cool. Like, I don't know what else to say besides that.
Yeah, no, once I realized self-production was an option, I was like, oh, the world opens up a little bit. But I'm excited to talk to Jeremiah because something that they spoke about when they came to class, they came in and they spoke to our youth opera students. And the students loved it. Oh my gosh, they got so much from it. It was so beneficial. So we immediately invited Jeremiah to come on the podcast. But one thing they talked about was the difference between an aspiration and a goal. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to digging into that more because I have also grown to realize that I think personal successes are professional successes. And when we have this idea of, I have this aspiration, say it's, I want to debut at Carnegie Hall in the next 5 years, right? We have this dream that is really lofty and feels really far away. Sometimes it can feel like we are like missing it by not getting there. Like the steps towards it feel so small that we kind of forget to appreciate that any little step towards it is a success. And for me, I mean, even a day-to-day getting through a day and feeling like you took care of yourself and you know, you met your needs, that is still a step to that aspirational dream, right? Like brushing your teeth one day could be the personal success of the day. And that is a part of you surviving, which gets you to your dream in the end. So I'm excited to dig in more about that. But yeah, if you have any thoughts on that before we invite Jeremiah on, go ahead.
Yeah, like Rick said, when Jeremiah said these things, I remember Rick and I looked at each other and we were like, we've had so many conversations about this. We wrote this into our script ideas for Crescendo. So it was very exciting to hear that Jeremiah had these same points of view and everything about success and about goal setting and aspirations and all of that. And yeah, and I, like Rick said, like small successes are successes and they need to be celebrated. And that was one of those big shifts that I learned in grad school too. And I'll save some of that for when Jeremiah joins us shortly. But yeah, those are things that I wish you learned about more in school and in programs and things like that. Because I certainly didn't have any conversations like that when I was in college or grad school. And it's nice to be able to have them now.
Well, I think with that, it's about time to invite Jeremiah. What do you say?
Let's do it.
We'll be right back with Jeremiah Sanders.
Welcome back, everybody. We are so excited to be joined here by the amazing, the outstanding, the wonderful Jeremiah Sanders. Hello.
Welcome,
the crowd
Jeremiah.
Goes wild. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. Really, really good. A little, you know, travel sleepy, but really, really good. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, we're super happy to have you. What you're traveling? What are your travels for?
Yeah, I after the double bill closed, snuck a trip into New York to present at a conference with some Minnesota opera fam and adjacent arts fam, and saw La Rondine last night, and now I got on a plane this morning and I'm back for this. Wow. And yeah, feeling great.
Busy, but we're super glad to have you. Speaking of the double bill, I know at the Luminary, Trouble in Tahiti and Service Provider just happened. How was that process for you?
Wow, it was really, really rewarding to be able to work with Kyle, the stage director. I felt like I was in the jazz trio, and I felt like the perspective that he brought to those characters, with our choreography and our movement, really helped my singing. And it really had a point of view that I wasn't expecting for the show. A lot of times, you know, you spend score studying or listening to a recording, you might look up a production online or something, but his perspective breathed like a new type of energy into it that caught me off guard and really helped me like discover things over the performance run. We had 9 performances, which is bananas.
That is a lot, yeah.
But it never felt like stale, you know, because he did such a good job of like giving us so many options and making sure that we were like uniform, but not homogenous, not carbon copies of each other. Yeah. And then we did Service Provider as well, the second half of the night, which was just so much fun. The audience's reactions had me every night. Like, I didn't know, you know, what they would laugh at or, you know, what they would gasp at. Sometimes it felt like I was a part of a Jerry Springer set, which you don't get that in opera very much. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I hear the music is very tricky as well. So it's nice to hear that it was like an artistically fulfilling process, even while it was such like a musically challenging process. I feel like sometimes when we have really challenging music, it can almost overshadow the artistic portion of it. And sounds like Kyle and the team and you all, obviously all of you resident artists, really held it down and were able to have a super fulfilling artistic experience. So that's great.
Yeah. is preparing a score like for the double bill, like how is that different for you preparation wise than something more in the, like, I don't like to use the word standard repertoire, but like, you know, like
Western
the Mozart
canon, perhaps.
Yeah, the Mozart and the Verdis and the what you think of when you think of big opera.
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind is there's a lot less translating because it's in English, right?
That's fair, yeah.
So nice.
Yeah, and I mean, there are moments where I do have to. So I'll speak to maybe the opposite end of that, like the what I would do to prepare for a air quote traditional kind of opera. So like you do all your translation with the Nico Castel and put your IPA in. Yeah. And, you know, then I go through and I do subtext and I'm translating other people's lines and trying to see like what does the music indicate about humor or about emotion just writ large. Like and then I try and put my motivations in, and because Trouble in Tahiti and Service Provider were in English, a lot of that just was innate, right? It was something that I didn't have to think about. I still looked at the music to guide me on like what moments are going to be, you know, the most emotionally impactful. And you'd never want to get too prescribed when you're preparing a score, because at the end of the day, it's a collaborative sport, right? You're going to work with the conductor and the director and your colleagues, and you want to have a couple of different options to kind of play a scene. But I think that is the bulk of the work. I will say that a lot of the reason I think like curriculums focus on the standard repertory is because it is just so pervasive, right? And so what I'm working toward with this sentence is I feel like sometimes the input, like when I'm learning it, it just becomes very streamlined and uncomplicated, because we've spent so many years doing like study, right, of this kind of music, whether it's absorbing it orally or looking at arias as like something you do in a lesson, doing a scene in opera workshop, etc., etc. So like a lot of times I feel like it just, by the time I'm learning a full role like Martello, it just is already somewhere in the recesses of my mind, and I just have to like pull it from the cloud. Trouble in Tahiti and Service Provider, getting back to what Rick was saying, like there are some nasty moments that,
oh yeah,
you know, take a lot of focus and attention, but the goal is always to, you know, make it seem effortless, and like I'm not counting or looking a ton, and you know, that having your brain kind of split one half on technique and what the musical objectives are and one half on the acting goals, like that has served me through
for
that
sure.
process.
It's so funny that you say that, because I, in my private studio, that's how I describe it. Like I have students who we, you know, we've been focusing so hard on the technique, and they're like, I don't see how you can then focus on both. And I call it the split mind. I'm like, we have to have this split mind. We have to compartmentalize. So how you just described it, it's so funny. That's exactly how I talk to my students about it. And I think that's so real.
Yeah, it's really helpful. Like, and it prepares you for like wacky things that happen during a performance. Like once I don't know what it was, but I heard like a loud clang that was coming from maybe the orchestra, maybe off stage, and like staying in character and focused on the music, but also like being aware that something just happened.
Is something falling from the rafters? Mm-hmm. Like, am I good?
Right. What was that? Should I be alarmed or no, we're good? But also not showing any of that vocally or emotionally through the acting. A pepper shaker fell off the table, and I was kind of wondering if the audience member was going to pick it up. They didn't. So I was kind of like, okay, how do I just like naturally make this seem like this happens every show, right? Mm-hmm. While doing some pretty tricky music. Did that answer your question, Jared?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Good. It's just, I was basically just wanting to hear about your process, because I know that like more modern works and and everything, like they require a different approach to learn, not only because of the language aspect, but just because of, I don't know, a lot of the vocal lines and things are not as intuitive always, and the orchestra is less and less helpful, so.
For sure. One question we had written down for you, I know we kind of jumped right into the double bill, but how's it been being a resident artist at Minnesota Opera? It's been a second, and I believe, is this your final year as a resident artist with Minnesota Opera? Wow. How's it been? How are you feeling?
I feel really good. I have been very grateful for my experience here. I love the Twin Cities. I feel like a lot of the values that I have as a person align with Minnesota Opera and the work that they're doing. I came out of a grad program, and so it's nice to come into an environment where the expectation is that you are a professional, and like there's not a precedent of like treating me as a student, right? At my big age, I feel like I've really gotten to like find out what works for me as an artist and like build on that, right? And yeah, expand on that platform of like me and my artistry and what's important to me and what do I value, like doing new works and challenging myself in that area, but also doing some of the more air quote standard things that fit nicely for my voice. I think that so far I've been pretty lucky to sing for a lot of different people that have come through as far as agents go, and making connections with other artists. And I consider myself an artist citizen. And so it's really important to me to always be making sure that I have one hand kind of like in the up and coming generation and in the community, and then also one hand on stage and like creating the art. And I feel like I've been able to do that some here, which has been nice. And I also think that as an ambitious person, like finishing up a doctoral degree and doing concerts outside of the Twin Cities, I've been really supported in that work as well. So it's been, I can't believe it's been 2 years, but it has been, and much has happened. It's kind of wild to think about how much I've been able to accomplish here. So it's bittersweet to have this chapter close, but it has to happen at some point. And I'm very thankful to everybody here that's poured into me. And yeah, I'm excited about all the things that are to come.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, we, as you were talking, I was reminded about the moment when Jared and I went, we have to have Jeremiah on the podcast, like speaking about having a hand for the next generation of artists. You were very kind and came and performed for Youth Opera Circle and Youth Opera Studio students, and they absolutely loved it. I think you kind of blew their minds, just in terms of like they've heard some of us sing, like some of the teaching artists, we sing occasionally for them, but to hear this voice, they were all kind of like whoa. So that was amazing. And then the conversation you had with them, answering their questions, you were very generous with your answers, and you kind of got around to the topic of this podcast,
a lot of the things we want to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, in your answers, just around what success looks like, how we kind of conceive of it, maybe how we have to break it down and reframe it for ourselves sometimes so we don't get burnt out or discouraged. But yeah, let's maybe bring it to that topic. Yeah. What has success looked like for you as an artist? Like, has it changed recently? Maybe where did it start, and has it ended up somewhere else? Just tell us a little bit about that for you.
So to really answer that, all I kind of have known is that I really enjoy singing. It is, I dare to say, the love of my life. I get a lot of joy out of doing it, and it brings me joy to see other people like feel what I feel about it, both on the stage and off the stage. And so success to me has been like just being able to make a living singing, and to keep like following where singing will take me, being willing to say yes to whatever gigs might come up. To be honest, I grew up singing in church choir with my great grandma when I was like 3 years old, and just haven't stopped singing since. And the curiosity that I have been able to like cultivate and foster by just having that musical background from a young age led me to like show choir and a lot of different arts opportunities growing up. And then I saw my first opera when I was like 17. It was The Magic Flute, and I thought it was the wackiest thing.
It's so campy. It's so ridiculous.
It is camp. But it really combined like all of my interests in the arts into one like spectacle, and I was like, oh my God, that's kind of cool. And I had a wonderful mentor named Noelle, and she was like, you could do that. And I thought, I probably could do that, huh? And how do you do that? And so like asking questions, and yeah, learning about music education programs and voice performance programs, and then getting into one at a small liberal arts school in Indiana. And yeah, it just have been like micro decisions like that where my curiosity has taken me to another phase of life. I would say that that has been like the securest route that I've been in with this thing. And over the years, I have gotten through like peers, a clue about what this all is, because to be honest, some days, even now, some days I'm like, oh, what is this thing that we're all doing, right? But like listening to mentors and peers and seeing what milestones are possible, and then thinking about myself and what I'm passionate about and how I want my art to look and how I want to show up in spaces, and being very intentional about whether or not the rooms that I'm in match my values, and like taking that pretty seriously, I feel like has led me to where I am now. And I feel like where I am now is a success story. And yeah, so as far as defining success, I feel like I haven't answered the question yet. I just kind of wanted to give a little background. But I feel like success is what you want it to be. I think it's a combination of being curious and making discovery, and then, you know, making goals and dreaming new dreams. And I think it can be nebulous because it's always evolving, at least for me. But yeah, that's kind of how I would, that's my recipe for what success is.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I loved what you said, kind of towards the beginning about like singing being the love of your life, and you hope that an audience will feel some of that love when you perform. Like that was, I think, a big mental shift for me too, going into grad school and stuff right after college, was like kind of reclaiming that for myself and like remembering why I started doing music in the first place, and being like, I have the great honor and opportunity to perform, and it starts with me, and then an audience gets to experience that, and like you welcome them in to that space with you instead of it being simply for them. Because like I, at least for me, I found that that like created a bit of a distance and separation, and that fed into like the performance anxiety and perfectionistic tendencies and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do think it's an exchange, right, of energy. And yeah, the more distance that we create, because in a way, like we do have to isolate ourselves to the practice room and like input a lot of information and then finesse it. And as a singer, I found that the amount of people that it takes for me to feel like I'm doing a really great job is more than just me. Like it's a team of people. And so surrounding myself with people who not only believe in me, but are willing to challenge me and support me, with like grace and compassion, values that I've carry for myself, and then knowing that like we have done the kind of grunt work of putting the notes and the rhythms and doing the translations and all of that, and at some point in the process that joy has to be
yes.
re-put back in, otherwise it leads to burnout, I found, and
totally.
It can make you bitter, you know?
Yeah.
Like if there's,
oh, yeah.
if
Yes.
we're not having fun, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember at one point I had to take like a hefty break during the pandemic because like the lockdown portion. And I didn't sing probably for like a year. Maybe occasionally I would practice, but I think what you said about value alignment really resonated with me because, you know, back in my undergrad days, I was cosplaying as a woman, I like to say, and I like was not living out like my truth. And because I didn't feel like the spaces I was in could handle my truth and like hold me in that truth.
Yeah.
So now I carry a lot. I have a lot of expectations for workplaces and production spaces. And if those aren't met, like I can guarantee you I'm not coming back because value alignment is so major. You have to feel like safe and cared for in an active way in artistic settings for me to feel like I can even attempt to be successful.
Right. Yeah. And I don't like to think of myself as a product or a commodity. I understand that, you know, in a capitalistic world, like there is an element of that as a singer that people can get, like there's a whole pipeline that you can get into where you're like self-promoting and just thinking about the business aspect in that kind of a way that is kind of like, I don't really have a neat way of like summing up what I see sometimes. But for me, like I think about what you just said and it sounds more holistic, right? And it sounds like you're a part of like an artistic community, and it's much more collaborative, still high standard of artistic excellence, but an approach that is humane and has a lot of humanity. And yeah, I vibe with that.
So one thing we've talked about as we were kind of breaking down what success means for us is how sometimes it can get kind of discouraging when there's this lofty dream that we all might have and we work, you know, for years and it feels like it's still so far away that sometimes we kind of lose these like micro successes that really do add up to making that dream a reality. And I think you had some really great things to say about that when the students were kind of talking about, you know, how do I reach these aspirations? And I'd love to hear you say a little bit more on, you know, the small successes adding up and how to balance like aspirational ideas with, you know, the reality of the current moment.
Yeah, I feel like I've been talking about this maybe a lot lately. I spoke with YLC, YLS with, and then I talked about it kind of yesterday. Somebody asked a question on this panel and they were thinking about this. And I know that sometimes in my progress, like I get so focused on the goal, right? Or how the goals are going to play into achieving like the bigger dream, that I get lost in the sauce a little bit. And oftentimes I just abandon other passions that I have. I abandon social connections that I have. I just get so hyper focused. And so zooming out and really like leaning into other passions that I might have. And then I'd also say like taking a breather and just kind of like relaxing, because art is my job and I love it, but it can be work, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes and getting too hyper focused and all of that really just kind of knots up the process for me. And so in order to detangle, like engaging with those passions that I might have, or taking a walk, or calling a friend, all of those things really play into what I'm trying to accomplish anyway. And it, I don't know how to explain it, but like it can just be a huge reset when you take a step back and take a deep breath. I remember some like very specific questions that talked about like, what do you do when you get discouraged? And what do you do if people don't believe in your dream or believe in your goals? And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, these young people are so thoughtful and so deep. I don't know if
They
I was
are.
thinking on that level when I was their age, but I'm so glad that they are because it gives me hope. And to be honest, like I've been thinking a lot about that and engaging with young people and hearing how inspirational their thoughts are really made me challenge myself to like cultivate a practice daily of it since we all met, of just like taking a pause, like really assessing what's working, what's not, and how can I be more in tune with the process of making art? Because sometimes it feels like, oh, I'm resting and I'm not working enough. And sometimes it feels like, okay, I have spent 4 hours in this practice room and I'm not getting anywhere. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is exactly what they were asking about. So how do I like try and regulate a little bit better, or differently so that I know that I'm constantly walking toward the goal and making progress and staying motivated, or rather cultivating the discipline that I need in order to remain motivated to achieve some of these things when it seems like things are pretty tough.
Totally, yeah. And I know our students have such big thoughts and big questions, and I'm always so impressed. Like, I do remember having this really like deep emotional world and a lot of really big questions. And now, like as a young artist, and seeing all of the students feel like comfortable sharing those in the Yossi and Yoess has been awesome to see as, educators. But I think it's so important to take care of yourself on the day to day. Like those, I think I said in the previous segment, like sometimes brushing your teeth is the success of the day. And that's real. Like if that's all you've got that day, that's what you've got that day. And that still gets you, like taking care of yourself gets you closer to what you want in life.
And that's part of that whole holistic thing. Sorry if I interrupted you there, Jeremiah.
No, I'm just yes anding over.
But yeah, like I especially in the last 4 years, like since pandemic and everything, I feel like I've been trying to have these conversations more with people about like you have to incorporate your entire self, especially into your art making. Like, your mental health affects, especially singers, like it affects the way that your instrument works.
Sure
And
does.
if you're not taking care of that, then you're not taking care of your instrument. And so like sometimes saying no is the right thing to do. Sometimes passing up an opportunity. Sometimes even I know it can be terrifying to do in the middle of a rehearsal to be like, I need to step out for a second. This subject material is really heavy. And me continuing to push through it is maybe not going to be the best for the creative process right now. Like you have to do those things. And it feeds the art and it makes it better for everybody. And also like with the whole managing those little disappointments and everything, like you have to allow yourself to feel those negative emotions still. I feel like, when I was in high school and everything and deciding I wanted to do this music thing full time, like I feel like I got a lot of the rhetoric about kind of like toxic positivity of like, well, you have to just put on a brave face. You
The
have
show
to,
must go
the show
on.
must go on. Like you can't make mistakes. You have to be perfect. And like, that's not realistic. And like, you're gonna face those disappointments and you have to allow yourself to feel that. And then it's what you do to get out of it. And it's what you do to be like, okay, I've learned from this. How can I make it different the next time? And if the next time is a disappointment, then the learning process is incremental. And I think that it's so important to sit with those, but then move yourself out of it as best as you can.
Right. Yeah. And Sometimes I have to remind myself, like, especially when things are looking a little gloom or, you know, tough in the practice room, like, okay, I know that I feel this way now. And I know that this is difficult now, but if I can just increase my like betterment by a fractal, like a 10%, 1%, like any improvement, any progress is going to lead to long-term gains. And so yeah, like I want to quote Miley Cyrus here and say it's a climb.
It is, it's the climb.
It's the climb. It's about that journey.
Well, I'm glad we got to kind of chat through these things a little bit more. I know we were kind of rushed in our Yossi and Yoess setting because we had lots of questions to move through. Like everyone had a hand up at one point. We were like, oh, we are engaged today. Hello, everyone. But I definitely want to chat about the upcoming engagement, or I guess you're in rehearsals right at this very moment for La Boheme, which is Minnesota Opera's next production that's being put up at the Ordway. How's that going? Are you finding success in this particular production?
Yes, I feel like I am finding success in it. It's really nice to have so many people in the room and to watch how they're working. I honestly love learning from my colleagues. I think that the best part of the job as a performer is understanding that we all are coming from so many different backgrounds, and there are so many different ways to like interpret a character or a moment, the music, and so being able to collaborate in that kind of way just by observing and absorbing has been so meaningful. I have been feeling really great singing it, especially after the double bill. With Trouble in Tahiti, you know, there was an element of jazz that isn't a part of the training that you get when you decide you want to be a voice performance major in most curriculums. And so being able to do both has been nice this season. But I'm very much feeling those Puccini lines just kind of envelop
Just butter to
me.
sing. It's so nice.
Yes, I hope that all of our listeners get to come and experience it because it's unlike any other production. The music is unlike, well, I guess it's similar to other Puccini operas, but you know, he does that thing well.
Yes. All composers recycle a little bit. So I know you mentioned Marcello. How is this a kind of a new learning for you, or has Marcello been something you've like learned before?
So it is a repeat for me, but it's my professional debut of it. The last time that I did this role, it was in 2021 or 2020, and it was fun to be able to still produce opera like in the peak of the pandemic. However, there were a lot of challenges that we had to overcome. Like when we were singing together, we had to stand at least or perform at least 10 feet apart. And when we weren't singing, we could be 6 feet apart. And so I think that there's a specific quality of intimacy in this opera that is really hard to achieve when you have to be that far away from your scene partner. We also had those, do y'all remember those masks? The like
Oh, the
triple,
clear ones or the.
the duckbill singer
Oh,
mask?
sure do.
Yeah, and they collected a lot of the moisture
Moisture. They
from,
sure do.
and it felt like you were, you
Soppiness in
know,
there.
suffocating in it. And
Yeah.
so, you
Yeah. Who
know,
needs a
running around.
nebulizer or a personal steamer when you've got, a mask?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about, you know, just how big of a change it is to be unmasked and to be able to be close with our scene partners and not, you know, throwing props across the stage. It was very rewarding to be a part of that back then. It was a testament to people's will to produce in in a pretty barren and scary place. And so, like, in a way, it's very emotional to be able to do this professionally now and to have all of the normalcy, in quotes, of producing opera back.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like during, 2020, 2021, there was definitely like the resiliency of the arts sector on display, but it's definitely nice to be able to settle back in and feel a little bit more comfortable in these spaces. Of course, illness is still happening. It is still impacting people's lives, but I feel that Minnesota Opera is very responsible in its practices around like the health of its performers and its staff. So it's definitely nice to see our ways return. The run of La Boheme, May 4th through the 19th, coming up. You can get your tickets at mnopera.org. Is there anything else you'd like to shout out to our audience about the production to encourage them to swing by?
So it's double cast, if you did not know. So be sure to think ahead, and I think both casts are fantastic. But know that, I won't be performing every night if you're coming to see me. But please do get tickets and come. Even if I'm not performing, come, because they are amazing. They're amazing.
Awesome. Any final thoughts from you, Jared?
It's been so awesome to get to talk to you about these things. I just love having these conversations with other similarly minded artists. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been awesome chatting with you again, Jeremiah.
It's been my pleasure, y'all. I love hanging out with y'all.
Let's do it more.
For sure. Well, yeah. Toy, toy, toy. I know you're going to absolutely rock it in La Boheme coming up. And to our listeners, we really encourage you to grab some tickets. And make sure you don't miss seeing Jeremiah rock the house as Marcello. Mm-hmm. But thank you, Jeremiah. We will see you around.
Ciao.
Well, we hope you enjoyed our conversation with the incredible resident artist at Minnesota Opera, Jeremiah Sanders. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of Crescendo, Building the Future of the Arts. And until then, take care.